I've titled this sermon, The Prelude to the Promise. Because next week's reading, we're going to read one of the greatest promises in all of Scripture, certainly to this point. And this is the prelude to that promise. This promise that we're going to read next week is a promise of home, of peace, of shalom. But like I said, this isn't the first promise in the Bible. This is more of just an outworking of that promise from Genesis 3:15, where God promised to restore humanity to the peace that they were created for. This is the promise that we're longing for. This is the promise that this week's text is preparing us for. This promise of no more evil, no more sin, no more brokenness, full restoration of perfect peace. But if we're being honest, even since God made that promise in Genesis 3, the situation hasn't exactly grown more hopeful, has it? As we've gone through these readings and these sermons the last few weeks, we saw just after God made this promise, we saw the first pair of siblings fight to the point of one of them killing the other, and then God casting the murderer out of his presence. Humanity became so evil that God had to wipe them out with a flood, save one family. And then when that family gets off the ark, what happens? The dad gets drunk. One of the kids sees him naked, laughs at him to his brothers, and gets cursed by his dad. And then we see, after we scan over hundreds of years of history, we get to the Tower of Babel, where humankind has collaborated against God. As we look back at that promise from Genesis 3:15, we have to think, really? Is it true? Is good really going to defeat evil? I really want us to take a moment and invite you just to consider, what are some of the obstacles in your life to experiencing the peace that you long for? This morning we're going to look at the brokenness in our world that precedes the blessing of God. But also we're going to see that even in the midst of the brokenness, the blessing is breaking through. So we're going to see in our text this morning that this prelude to this promise is not all that beautiful. But actually the picture we see is a picture of cosmic, global, national, and personal brokenness through which God's blessing is going to break through. So we're going to jump in here and look at this brokenness kind of before the blessing. I think my headings are helpful this morning. They might be more confusing than helpful. We'll see. But I want you to focus less on kind of like the cosmic, global, national, and look at that's how Israel was experiencing it, but we'll see how we experience it too. So first, this cosmic brokenness. So Ashley's uncle passed away this past week unexpectedly. It was extremely sad and hard. We were grateful to be able to be home with family. But at the funeral, after the funeral, I went up and spoke to his son-in-law, the uncle that died, who had tragically lost his wife several years ago. And I said, man, I just really am so sorry for what you're going through. I know this is extremely difficult for you. And he kind of just shrugged his shoulders and just said, it is what it is. This is just how it goes. And I thought, well, that is one way that we deal with the death and the suffering in our world, right? Is just to resign ourselves to it, to think this is just what it is. And in some ways, I think it's not unreasonable to feel that way because death so often seems to be encroaching in all of our lives. And we see that here in this genealogy, that death is encroaching deeper and deeper into life. And again, I'm preaching from a genealogy this morning, so we're going to have to do a little bit of work together, all right, to see some of these things. But what we see here, and I had to do a lot of math to figure this out, is that the average age is decreasing significantly for humanity. And so we had another genealogy similar to this back in Genesis 5. And in that genealogy, the average age was, what was it? Let's see, I did the math. The average age was about 916 years, okay, between the time that people were born and when they died. It was about 916 years. When you add up all the ages of the people in this genealogy, the average age has dropped from 960 years to 350 years. Okay, so we think that's still a lot longer than we're living, but you see that it's gradually decreasing too throughout the genealogy. So what we see here is that death indeed is encroaching more and more upon life. This is a gradual fulfillment of what God said was going to happen. He said it was going to happen in Genesis 2, that if Adam and Eve ate the fruit of the tree, they would surely die. Then he says again in chapter 6, verse 3, that there's a new limitation on the lifespan of mankind. The situation is not looking good. Is God really going to fulfill his promise to crush the head of the serpent, or is death just going to keep on winning and winning and winning? We must be honest and see that this is a reality of life in this world. We are surrounded by death. Ashley and I felt that acutely this week, just a year after her dad passing, uncle dying unexpectedly of a heart attack. We are surrounded by death, but not just physical death, but also death in all different ways. Sin and broken relationships, disease, sadness, political unrest. Death is encroaching upon us more and more in our lives. This is a brokenness on a cosmic scale. That we as humanity were created for eternal life, and yet because of sin, death is encroaching more and more. We see that here in our text through the decreasing lifespan in our genealogy. But we also see not only a cosmic brokenness, but also a global brokenness as well. I want to jump back to last week's text just a little bit and look at how after the Tower of Babel, the Lord dispersed the people from all over the face of the earth so that they left off building the city. I don't know if they give this anymore, but I feel like it was just a running joke that at every beauty pageant, they kind of ask the contestants, you know, if you could have one thing, what would you want? And what do they always say? They want world peace. Okay, good. I thought that was not something I was making up. They all want world peace, and we all kind of laugh at that, like that's some sort of pie-in-the-sky thing that will never happen. And so we too, as we've resigned ourselves to death, the presence of death in the world, we've also resigned ourselves to the division that's in the world. We were created for peace and harmony. That world peace that those beauty queens are pointing us to should not be so elusive, and yet it is. We see that even here in this text. And in Genesis 11, humanity, they were created to be united for the good of God's creation. Remember that. He said, go multiply and fill the earth. And he was saying, go take my presence out to all the world. But what did mankind do in Genesis 11? The Tower of Babel, rather than uniting for God's good and glory, they united themselves against God to make a name for themselves. And so God divided them. And so now we live in a world that is divided. Peoples and nations against one another. We live in a divided world. Don't we feel that? Certainly globally. I mean, we can't even imagine global peace. We can hardly find peace in our own nation, our own neighborhoods, even our own homes. Death and division seem like they define our world as we know it now. And we have to think, God, are you really going to fulfill your promise to us? Cosmic brokenness with death, global brokenness and the division of the world. God, what are you doing? We see not only cosmic and global brokenness in this passage, but also national brokenness. I don't know if you guys have been paying attention to the political happenings. I'm sure you have. It seems like every political candidate is making an argument that if we could just restore the morality of our country, then we can have the peace that we're longing for. Now, certainly the morality that they're arguing for, each one of them is far different from the other. But the argument is the same. If we could restore our national morality, then we would have the peace that we're longing for. So this isn't a political statement about the state of our national politics, but it's one about the reality of the world that we find ourselves in, which is so confused morally. And I think we can begin to think that this is something new, but it's not. This has been going on for thousands of years. Moral complexity, idolatry, false worship. This was the world in which Abram's family found themselves in. It's not, again, entirely clear here, but Ur and Haran, both of these places that Abram's family lived, they were well known for their worship of various cults, particularly a cult that worshipped the moon. Not only that, but Abram's wife Sarai and Nahor's wife Milcah both have names that indicate they were part of that cult that worshipped the moon, at least influenced by this culture around them. I mean, it's interesting that Nahor's wife is his uncle Haran's daughter. They did that back then. So even Abram's uncle named his daughter after a part of this cult that worshipped the moon. So not only is Abram's family living amongst an idolatrous culture, but it seems that they have syncretized themselves with this culture. And so we can often think as American Christians that part of the problem with our country is our lack of morality and Christians' own participation in it. But this is nothing new. In this prelude to God's promise, we find that the one who receives God's promise, Abram, he doesn't come from a perfectly pure family with no issues, but he comes from a family who lives amongst the people who worship the moon, other gods apart from the one true God, and who seem to have joined themselves to them, at least to some degree. And so in order to receive the promise of God's peace, we often think we must purify ourselves, make ourselves worthy, but by all indications here, Abram, the recipient of God's promise, was not pure. So we experience this brokenness on a cosmic, a global, a national level, but then also there's personal brokenness in this story as well. In verse 30, we see that Sarai was barren. She had no child. Perhaps you're like me and you feel like maybe you don't even have the capacity to grieve the cosmic, global, national brokenness because you're so aware of your own personal brokenness. You've been with us throughout this series, this promise of peace that God made. It was meant to come through a specific seed, a seed of Eve, he says, and the story since then has been following Eve's descendants. Story so that one of her descendants will be the one to crush the head of the serpent. That's kind of the tension of this whole story. We saw that when Cain killed Abel, he forfeited his right to be that promised seed. So God gave Eve another son, Seth. And then we see that promise continued through Noah and the flood. And now through Shem. And so now the genealogy is going down through Shem to show us who this one who is going to crush the head of the serpent is going to be. But here it seems like it's come to a dead end. Sarai is barren. She has no child. If God was going to work through this family, Sarai needs to have a child. But it seems like this is impossible. So for some of us, even if we're able to work through the cosmic, global, national struggles that we have to believe that God's promise of peace is coming to us, we're left with ourselves. This is what I discovered again last night when I got home. I thought we had escaped all of the other outside brokenness. And then we get home to find that, no, I'm part of the problem as well. And so this brokenness that we see in the world is not just outside us, but it's in us as well. I'm curious what might make you question or be a hindrance for you personally to experiencing the blessing, the peace of God. Well, there is good news for all of us this morning. Whether we're feeling the effects of the brokenness cosmically, globally, nationally, or personally, what we find this morning is that even in the midst of the brokenness, there is blessing. The fullness of God's blessing has not yet come, but even as we await the fullness of that blessing, it is breaking through the brokenness. So I just want to look briefly at how God's blessing is breaking through the brokenness, the peace and the promise of God coming to us even in these dire circumstances. First, we see this cosmic blessing and the brokenness. So when we contrast this genealogy in Genesis 11 with that genealogy back in Genesis 5, we see, first of all, that the average age is decreasing, but we see something else as well. There's a different emphasis in each of these genealogies. In the previous genealogy, there's a consistent refrain. So all the days of Seth were 912 years and he died. All the days of Enosh were 905 years and he died. All the days of Kenan were 910 years and he died. After every single person, it emphasizes that they died. But we actually don't have that emphasis in this genealogy. And this genealogy, instead of ending with "and he died," it ends with "and he had other sons and daughters." And so I think that what the author is trying to show us here is that while death is still a part of our story, it's not the end of our story. That for each one of these generations, they continued on, the fathers reproducing themselves in other sons and daughters, life continuing even in a world filled with death. And this is our hope as Christians. Not that in this world death would be totally eradicated or suffering completely avoided, but that even amidst a world full of death, death does not have the final say. That there is always the promise of life even in the midst of death. God working together all things for the good of those who love him. And this life continues to preserve the fertile ground needed for the promises of God to be received. So God's breaking through the cosmic brokenness with his blessing. Even in the midst of global brokenness, we see too that God's blessing is breaking through. We saw, I think it was 2 weeks ago when Matt went through the previous genealogy, he showed that God is in full sovereign control of all the nations. So that even this divided world is not outside of God's sovereign control, and he's even using the division in this world to bring about his purposes. We see that the people have gone out and they've created cities in all of these different places, and these cities are being used for the blessing of God's people. Abram's family taking up residence in Ur of the Chaldeans, benefiting from this divided world where these people have gone out and built cities. And now they're moving forward toward Canaan, where they will experience the perfect peace that God has promised them. Again, resulting from God sending people out, they've created this city of Canaan, and so now the people of God will be blessed. So many of us can look at the world around us, either globally or locally. We look at the division around us, and we think, God, how could you possibly work in and through our divided world? And yet what we see here is that what is seemingly broken about society, this division, is actually being used by God, redeemed by God for the blessing of his people. And so we don't put our hope ultimately in the political landscape or political unity coming about in our lifetime. But we recognize that God can work even in the most broken and divided of circumstances. This is what we long for, that God will redeem and use even our divided world for his good. Thirdly, we see that God is breaking through even the national brokenness with his blessing. Now, again, we have to do some detective work here, but you might be kind of surprised to discover that Noah, who I don't know how many generations removed from Abram he was, Noah was still alive when Abram was born. Because and back in Genesis 9, it told us that Noah lived for about 350 years after the flood, and so I did a lot of work, and then I Googled to check my work, and it was right that Abram and Noah overlapped probably for about 58 years. So why does this matter? Well, I believe that even in the midst of this kind of idolatrous world that Abram's family found themselves in, God preserved a faithful father. You could imagine Noah teaching his grandchildren and his great-grandchildren, his great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren the promises of God. Reminding them of that promise that Canaan was going to serve his brothers. Now, certainly, Noah wasn't perfect. He should have done a better job probably teaching his children and grandchildren that they might not participate in the idolatrous worship around them. And yet God had it designed that he would keep Noah throughout all the generations here. That there would remain a faithful one even among an idolatrous family. And then finally, we get this personal brokenness. And we have to see here that actually there seems to be no hope for this brokenness. There's no glimmer of hope in this story about Sarai. Sarai is barren. She has no child. This seems like a hopeless, dire situation. And we might feel the same way about our own personal brokenness. There's no hope here. This seems to bring an end to the promise of God's peace. We're not going to preach this text, so I'm going to go ahead and give it away now. That God does miraculously give Sarai a child through whom God's promised blessing is going to come. Sarai was barren in this chapter today. Abram was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born. But God miraculously overcame this personal brokenness to bring about his blessing. Brothers and sisters, I want you to know that nothing can stop God from fulfilling his promises to us. He has promised us peace, and that promise is coming. That promise is offered to us. That promise is being and will be fulfilled. But it might not be fulfilled for you circumstantially. Brokenness. Experiencing deeply personal brokenness. National or cosmic or global brokenness. That might not be cured, but even in the midst of that, you can have peace. Because the promise of God's peace, the ultimate blessing of God, it doesn't come through our circumstances, but it comes through Jesus Christ himself. It's why I had that New Testament genealogy read, because that genealogy ties Jesus all the way back to this moment that we're in now. That ultimately the promise of God's peace is not even going to be seen in the next chapter. The Israelites don't ever fully experience it this side of heaven, but Jesus himself is our peace. He brings the shalom that we were created for. He does this cosmically where he deals with death on the cross, where he brings this new hope of resurrection. Not just that we will raise from the dead at the end of our lives, but this principle of resurrection is offered to us even now. That God can bring life through death, beauty in brokenness. Jesus deals with the global brokenness where he came not just to save one nation, but he so loved the world that he came that anyone who believes in him can have life. God is not a partisan God, but he brings diverse people to him and he overcomes our division one with another in himself that we might be united in him. He deals with our idolatry, this national idolatry that Israel was experiencing. He comes and he deals with this on the cross where he takes our sin on the cross. He offers us his life that we might be freed from sin and live in light of how God created us to live. And then finally, God comes to us in our personal brokenness through Jesus Christ. He says, anyone who is weary or heavy laden, come and find rest for their souls in me. If you're struggling with anything that you think might block you from the peace of God, Christ has overcome this. To be clear, we experience this partially now. And so we have to cling to this by faith. And honestly, like this is a lesson that I'm learning literally like this morning as I wake up and our air conditioner is not working. That's causing chaos for me. And I'm asking God, what does it mean to have peace in the midst of this circumstance? What does that look like? Right now, that peace, it's partial. But there is a day coming when the fullness of God's peace will be experienced not just in part, but in full. There's a day coming when Revelation 21 says, God will wipe away every tear from our eye, that death shall be no more. There shall be no more mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore. There will be a day when there will be no more division, but as John sees in heaven, a great number that no one could number from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and languages are standing before the throne. God will fully overcome our idolatry, it says. He says, I will heal their idolatry. I will love them freely. They shall return and dwell beneath my shadow. And personally, Paul says, each one of us will be transformed into the perfect image of God. This is the day that we're longing for and looking for and believing by faith, and it's even breaking through our brokenness now. I want to invite you to come to open your eyes, to lift your eyes to heaven where we will fully know the peace of God that we were created for. And let's pray together that would break through even our brokenness now.